Not a complete fingerprint, but you see the structure of that fingerprint, and she's got in a little book. Okay. Now I want us to read a scripture. Just keep that picture in your minds, and we're going to read some verses from the book of Nehemiah, starting from verse 1. Chapter 1 and verse 1. These are the members of Nehemiah, son of Hakaliah. In late autumn in the month of Kislev, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was at the fortress of Susa. Hananiah, one of my brothers, came to visit me with some other men who had just arrived from Judah. I asked them about the Jews who had returned there from captivity and about how things were going in Jerusalem. They said to me, "Things are not going well for those who returned to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down and the gates have been destroyed by fire." When I heard this, I sat down and wept. In fact, for days I mourned, fasted, and prayed to the God of heaven. Perhaps there's a little comment to that point. If there's something that you have sensed that God is doing in your life, sometimes we dream about things. Sometimes we celebrate things, but there are other times that He causes us to weep about things. We have both emotions when it comes to the things that God has put in our hearts. I want to weep over the city, and other times I want to shout for joy over the city. And when those emotions have stayed with me right from the first day that we arrived in Dresden, or even before that, and for me that's just again and again confirmation that we are in the right place. Then we go down to verse 11. "O Lord, please hear my prayer. Listen to the prayers of those of us who delight in honoring you. Please grant me success today by making the king favorable to me. Put it into his heart to be kind to me." So Nehemiah has the idea that he's going to speak to the king and he's going to ask the king for favor. He's going to ask the king for some things that he needs to be able to get the job done. Then actually what has happened is that God has put in his heart a vision to rebuild the walls of the city. And we pick up the story again in chapter 2 and in verse 1. "Early the following spring, in the month of Nisan, during the 20th year of King Artaxerxes' reign, I was serving the king his wine. I had never before appeared sad in his presence. So the king asked me, 'Why are you looking so sad? You don't look sick to me. You must be deeply troubled.' Then I was terrified, but I replied, 'Long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire.' The king asked, 'Well, how can I help you?' And with a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied, 'If it please the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried.' The king, with the queen sitting beside him, asked, 'How long will you be gone? When will you return?' And after I told him how long I would be gone, the king agreed to my request. I also said to the king, 'If it please the king, let me have letters addressed to the governors of the province west of the Euphrates River, instructing them to let me travel safely through their territories on my way to Judah.'" Oh, thanks. "And please give me a letter addressed to Asaph, the manager of the king's forest, instructing him to give me timber." And initially he's very, very afraid. And then as the king responds to him and speaks to him kindly and so on, he gets bold. And in actual fact, what has happened is that appears to me that he's thought through these things very well already. He's already got a strategy. He's already got an idea. And so now he says to the king, he basically then says, "Well, hey, God's with me. Let's go for broke. We just ask him for all that we can get out of him at this moment, because we're going to need all these things for the work that's up ahead." And so I said to him, "If it please the king, let me have letters addressed to the governors of the province west of the Euphrates River, instructing them to let me travel safely through their territories on my way to Judah. And please give me a letter addressed to Asaph, the manager of the king's forest, instructing him to give me timber. I will need it to make beams for the gates of the temple fortress, for the city walls, and for a house for myself. So, I mean, these are all things that he's thought through. That he's going to need a house, he's going to need a place to stay, he's going to need all the things that he needs to actually get that job done. And the king granted these requests because the gracious hand of God was on me. And then we read down in verse 17 and 18, and this is now after Nehemiah's inspected the wall. If you know the story, what happens is he goes out and he looks at the wall by night. He actually goes to Jerusalem, he's now got leave and so on, and he makes a bit of a recce of the wall, and he writes down and sees the things that need to be done. And then after that, he gets together with the officials. In verse 16, it says, the city officials did not know I had been out there or what I was doing, for I had not yet said anything to anyone about my plans. I had not yet spoken to the Jewish leaders, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or anyone else in the administration. But now I said to them, you know very well what trouble we are in Jerusalem. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace. Okay, so he gets them all together and now he's making a speech or he's talking to them. He's obviously had lots of conversations with them. And then in verse 18 he says, then I told them about how the gracious hand of God had been on me and about my conversation with the king. And this particular verse is where I want to put a bit of emphasis this evening, because I'm fascinated by the stories in scriptures, in the scripture where there is a governor, or there's a king, or there's a leader, and he gets together the people, and he speaks to them, and after that we find that there is an incredible energy that gets released through these people. I mean, the walls have been lying, destroyed for 150 years. I mean, this wasn't the walls are broken down a year ago and now we're going to quickly rebuild them. 150 years, the walls have been in ruins. Secondly, these walls are thick walls, and thirdly, the walls are estimated to be about 22 kilometers long. So we're talking about a long wall. And an incredible story. So he gets them all together. I mean, no one's wanted to rebuild the wall before. Now he's got all them together. Now he gets them together and he speaks to them and he blows this energy or this courage or this vision into them. And we've got to ask ourselves, what did he say to them? What did he say to them? And so what I want to say to you this evening is two things that I believe that he said to them, which I believe is going to burn in your heart tonight. Two things that are going to help you in the work that you're doing in the church, in your vision for the church here, but also in the things that the work that you do together with one another. And it's two fingerprints of God. And I believe that very often what happens is that we actually don't realize what God has actually been doing in our lives. Sometimes we don't even see the fingerprints. And fingerprints are all over the place. There are many, many fingerprints in your life that you possibly don't even realize are there. But there has to be an action. There has to be a recognition somehow that fingerprint is there. That's what a fingerprint, that's what a detective does. You can't actually see the fingerprints, but he comes along with his powder and he comes along with all his utensils and he actually finds that fingerprint and he actually takes that fingerprint and records that. And I want you this evening to stay with me through the message tonight. And at the end of the message, I want to give you the homework exercise to actually write down in your journal or write down somewhere the fingerprints that I'm going to be speaking about tonight, that you got them recorded. Because some of you don't realize that there are some fingerprints that are there on your life, and you need to become aware that they're there, and you need to see that they're there, because they're not invisible, but they are there. And so what Nehemiah comes and does is he says to the people here, there are two fingerprints of God. There are two fingerprints of God that are all over the task that I have. And these two fingerprints that are all over the task, they are the reason why I believe that God is actually in this that he wants to do. That's the reason why I believe that we are going to have a successful project. And in verse 18, he says to them, that the gracious hand of God has been on me, and he tells them about his conversation with a king. And so, first thing this evening, you can go to the title. I think we perhaps missed the title there, right in the beginning. But we can write, if you're looking for a title this evening, and just go down one again. Nehemiah recognizes two fingerprints of God. That's really what I want to say tonight. You can take this home with you this evening, and you can let it brand in your heart. I think this will help you a lot. So the first fingerprint, let's go down to that slide. About number four or so. Here we go, fingerprint number one. God brings us into position. God brings us into position. Nehemiah is an incredible story, because in this story we actually find, if you think about it, here we've got a man, Nehemiah. He's someone who is, he's one of those that's been one of the refugees from Jerusalem. He's now living in Babylon. He is possibly, as a young boy, being brought into the, his parents were refugees. He's brought into the service of the king. He's actually part of that administration. He's a little guy. He grows up. He comes into service. And these are all things that I'm just surmising. But I mean, think about the process, because he actually becomes the cupbearer of the king. The cupbearer of the king, not everyone became the cupbearer of the king. You had to be somebody who the king absolutely 100% trusted, and that was only possible if you'd had a huge pedigree of service. So I think that he was in the service of the king for many, many years, and he had proved himself faithful in many smaller things, and now he comes to the point of actually being the cupbearer of the king. And he doesn't, at that stage, when he becomes the cupbearer of the king, he's got no clue what God actually has ahead for him. God has been pushing buttons. God has been bringing him into position. He's already lived however many years of his life. And up to that stage in his life, he's had no mega assignment, no mega task. He's not a famous person. He doesn't have his name written on big signboards or anything like that, but God has been working with him, and now he brings him into position and then touches his heart. Touches his heart when he actually asks, like, what's happening in Jerusalem? And he's in that situation where he's at the right place, he's at the right time, at that point in his life, he's made the right calls, he's made the right decision. God has been bringing him into that place, and he has this trust relationship with the king, because God actually wants to use him. It is a sovereign hand of God that's been upon him. And so now the king, he has the vision that God puts in his heart, and he knows that somehow he's going to have to get this job done, and so he has contact with the king. What an incredible situation. And I want to say to you, what about your life? What about your life? I want to say with 100% certainty that for the plans and purposes that God has got for your life, that he has been working in your life, and there's a fingerprint of God bringing you into position for what he wants you to do. It's awesome. It is absolutely an awesome thing to actually see how those things begin to work together. And he could have said at that stage, he could have said, well, hey, I've been praying for so long about Jerusalem and no one's heard my prayers. Where is God in this whole situation? He could have been saying, has God forgotten our people? Look at Jerusalem. Look at the ruins. 150 years. I mean, all I've ever seen is the wall just broken down. It's the only thing I know about Jerusalem. Has God forgotten us? Where are we? He had seen no changes. He possibly even looked at his own life and thought to himself, hey, I'm a gifted leader, and all I've been doing is sitting in waiting phase for a number of decades of my life. What on earth is going on? He could have said to himself, I'm only a cupbearer. Who am I, in any case? What am I? Do I actually have any important function whatsoever? But no, he had actually in his heart, he had the right attitude. He was prepared for the task. He was open to what God wanted for him. And in fact, he was perfectly positioned for that particular moment. And God uses these situations all the time. He never stops using that. So he's got direction for our lives. And then at the same time, as we respond positively to that, as we begin to respond to what he has, we begin to get onto that track with him, especially as we become believers and we begin to be sensitive to what God wants for us. There's a working together between him and what he wants and us and our responses that bring us to, that brings a result which is really wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. I look back at my own life and there's a fingerprint of God in terms of position in the most incredible, phenomenal way. When I look back and I say, well, when I first went to Germany, I was an accountant back then and had no idea, no desire to go to Germany. I was an accountant and was wanting to work overseas sometime. That was about as far as it went, but never thought of Germany because we were English-speaking family. So we were thinking UK, we were thinking USA, we are thinking Australia. And then the boss comes along and says, we actually want to send you on this particular assignment, and there's one catch in the whole thing. And that's that we are wanting to send you to Germany. And like, what? Germany? And what, I've never ever thought of Germany, but, you know, why Germany? And he says, well, because we've got a particular assignment, we've got these German clients, and we want to give you some experience, and you're going to come back after 2 years, and you're going to work with these German clients. Only the fact is that God got us to Germany back then, used all the company's money. It was really great to get us there, the whole family, to bring us back again, use all the company's money. And then all that happened was that God got a hold of our hearts. He opened our hearts for that nation and gave us a call to that nation. It was absolutely incredible. Brought us into position. And then not only that, but certain of the experiences that we had was we are responding to different moments as we lived in that city. And he was able to speak into our hearts. Some of the things, we didn't even know what we were doing sometimes. And we had sovereign connections with different people, sovereign meetings that we went to and so on. And he was busy doing that. Then we're leading a church many years later, Val and Reg, in our church there in Benoni. Anybody else know where that is? Okay. It's a wonderful place, Benoni, right? Reg, yeah, great place, eh? And so we're in this city of Benoni and we've planted a church there and we got a heart for Germany and we are wondering like how are we gonna get to Germany, where are we gonna go to? Some of the guys in our apostolic team had said, you know, don't go to Dresden because there's this church that started a relationship with the team back then. And so we're looking at other places and wondering where we're going to go to. And then about 2-3 years after that, that relationship started, the leader of the apostolic team says to us, they've got real problems in the church there in Dresden. And so the next time you go to Europe, you really got to go to Germany. And I want you to go and make yourself available to help in Dresden because you can speak a bit of German. And I think it would help them if they could speak German to you. Yeah, so that's what happened. So his decision to say, please go and help those guys, he didn't even know what he was saying, but it was a fingerprint of God. God was actually working it all out together. First of all, Germany, then later on Dresden, and their relationship developed with the church there, and that became the place where they eventually decided to ask us to come and lead the church. That's how we got to go there. What a thing that God could actually work that out, and he's actually taken us to that place and brought us into a place which is part of the call of God that is on our lives. We've got a young, we were talking this afternoon about a young lady in our church who's been in the church now for nearly 6 months. And about 2.5 years ago, she came to a big conference in that we held over the New Year time called Jesus Live. And her brother was at the conference, and she came. And her life story is that she was, when she was 19, she left Germany and went to Canada, said, there's no way that I'm ever going to come back to Germany and be part of a church because I've had some bad experiences in church, and I don't think there's any really good churches in Germany, so I'm going somewhere else. And so she spent a year in Canada, then she went to the UK, and she's in the UK for a number of years. She's been here in, I think, near Bath, and she did got a degree in theology. And so she comes to that Jesus Life conference, and she really gets touched. And for the first time, she feels like God opens her heart and says, maybe Germany for you for the future. And she's saying, never Germany for me. That's it for me. A year later, she comes to the next Jesus Life conference, and she feels God say to her, not only Germany, I want you to come back to this city and be part of what's happening here. In the meantime, she connected up with us for a coffee on one occasion when she was first there. And every time I have those kind of connections with people, my heart's always open. I'm always saying, like, Holy Spirit, what is this about? You know, what do you want to do with this person? Sometimes it's nothing, and other times, hey, it's, you know, God's really putting something together. Now, this last couple of years, I've been dreaming about a project called Activate. I was sharing with the leaders last night. And as I'm dreaming about this project, and we have this meeting, and I'm thinking, well, hey, she could actually fit together with this project, maybe. And then last year she came in December, it was the end of 2015, and she said, I'm coming back to Dresden, and whatever happens, even if I serve in, if I'm serving drinks in restaurants, or if I'm, you know, delivering newspapers and whatever, God told me to come back, I'm going to be giving up my job at the, by that stage she's working as a student, a campus organizer at the campus in the Bible College in the UK here. So she says she's coming back, and at that stage I felt like this project of training people, Bible school, leadership training school, which is connected with our church, and this what she's got in her heart, I got this feeling that these two things fit together. So in April, I said to the elders in our church, this is somebody who you guys don't even know, you've never met her, but I feel that this thing I'm dreaming about, and this person could be the missing link. Maybe we should ask her to come. And so we get together, and the guy said, look, bring her, let's pay for a trip and get her to come and come for 2 days, and we'll talk to her and interview her and so on, and we'll see what we think. So she comes across, and after those 2 days, they all said, yeah, well, let's give her a job. So we employed her we said to her, okay, if you come out to Germany, we'll give you a job for 2 days a week. And we want you to work on this Activate project. And so she came the 1st of September, and absolute hand in a glove fit. The first time we ever took anyone and paid anyone who'd come straight from outside the church into a paid position in the church, but we felt that God was in it. And she's working now 3 days a week, and from the beginning of April, 4 days a week, and she's a perfect fit into what we're doing. God had his fingerprint on her, that her brother started coming to our church. He's had his fingerprint bring her into position for what he wants her to do, and what God's got up ahead, who knows. It's going to be an amazing, incredible story to see how that whole thing unfolds. So we need to believe that he's doing that. But the problem that we've got is that we can see it often when we look backwards. And if you look at your own life, you can see those fingerprints. But the problem that we've got is that so few of us are actually thinking fingerprints of God when we look forward. And so we need to start thinking fingerprint of God looking forward. Do you expect that he could actually be bringing you a God-given connection tomorrow? Or is tomorrow just going to be for you another normal day? Maybe it's a special day. Maybe it's a special thing that he's going to bring, and it's going to be part of your future. We don't know what God is busy with. He's always busy with something which could have far-reaching implications. When we had that first coffee with that lady Judith, I mean, we never ever believed that she was going to be working for us in the future. We just had a coffee with her, you know, and now she's like an integrated part of our staff. It's awesome. Romans 8:28 says that we know that for those that are called, that love God and according to His purposes, He is the one that leads us into good things. That's what He does. So we need to recognize that. I'm in the right place. Recognize that you're not wasting time. And one of the problems that I also think on this particular point is that we have this very strange definition of what success is about. You know, we think that success means that every single day there's going to be action breakthrough, there's going to be like thunder in the sky, there's going to be fireworks, and then we're going to realize that we're actually being successful. And really, the success that God has for us is something different. You being faithful over a long period of time with a particular assignment that He's given to you, that is, in His economy, success. You might think that it's not success because you're looking for the fireworks. But actually, He's saying, hey, you're being successful. Do you think that Nehemiah was unsuccessful until the time that he went and spoke to the king? Was his life unsuccessful at that point? I don't think so. He wasn't famous. No one knew about him. But he was waiting for the timing of God. Or God was waiting for him to be to a certain point before there was another task for him. But it wasn't like he was unsuccessful. He was actually in the perfect will of God at that point. So for important for you and for me that we need to realize that as well and see that actually God is working in those things, and that when we are faithful in those things, when we are faithful in things, sometimes we have to get that rhythm. He's actually strengthening us. Last night someone said, God strengthening our hands for the task. And I think he is doing that. He is doing that. We have experiences that build us so we're actually able to do that task better. You're not actually wasting your time. Your successfulness alone is already a success. 10 years in South Africa, between leaving Cologne back then, came back to South Africa. It took 10 years before we came back to Dresden. It was 2.5 years working for that employer, then another year at the bigger church in Johannesburg, and then 6.5 years in Benoni. 10 years. You know, I'd say, well, in terms of Germany, hey, what a waste of time. But let me tell you, what an incredible preparation. And God knew what was coming up, and thank God for the preparation. I thought that we needed 2 years or 3 years, but He knew in His wisdom that 2 or 3 years was really way not enough, that we needed 10 years, you know, to be able to do the next assignment. And what, were we being unsuccessful in that time? No, we weren't. In terms of Germany, maybe, but in terms of the outward things, but in terms of the things that He was doing in our lives, successful, faithful, getting on with that job. And so even though we don't see those things straight away, we are still being successful. Second fingerprint that I want us to be aware of is that in this, Nehemiah makes him aware of the fact that God has created moments of His favor. So he said, I'm not in any position. He said to them, I had the opportunity to speak to the king. God brought me in position and He spoke about this conversation that I had with the king. And the second thing that He said to them was, let me tell you about the favorable hand of God that was upon me. Let me tell you about the favor, the moments of favor that I experienced in that conversation with the king. Let me tell you about the moments of favor that I've experienced up until now, and then tell me what you think. And as he stands up and he speaks about fingerprint number one, fingerprint number two, the people actually realize, wow, this is actually incredible. This is actually awesome stuff that he's talking about. Because if you think about it, I mean, he couldn't... The building had the wall had been torn down for 150 years. I mean, the king himself as a Babylonian king, had zero interest whatsoever in rebuilding that wall. Thought about that? Why would the king want to rebuild the wall in Jerusalem? I mean, that was phenomenal that he had that sort of favor with that king. Even if he had a chance to speak to the king, why would the king give him all the things that he asked for? So he makes that whole list of things, and we know the king responded in every way and said, I'll give you a letter of authority. You want wood? I'll give you wood. I mean, I've got no interest in building the wall, but what do you want? I'll help you. You know, I mean, that's actually what he said. Incredible, isn't it? There was just such an incredible favor that was upon that whole conversation. And as he shared that, people say, wow, God is in this. And then the next verses, and afterward they got up and they started to build on the wall. Because they knew that there was a thumbprint of God, there was a fingerprint of God on that whole thing. And maybe this evening, you need to look back on your own life. And you need to actually be aware of some of the things of favor, the fingerprints of favor that are there that sometimes you don't even see. And sometimes we fight for something and we don't get it right. And other times when the favor of God is on it, we know what we need to do, and it's like he goes even ahead of us and makes it possible for us to have a breakthrough. And we're not working on it. I mean, after we got to Germany, we had a visa for 1 year. They've got visa status is about six different levels of visa status, and we were like the bottom, you know, the bottom on the list. That means that after your 1 year mostly, you got no right to work, you got no right to earn any money, you have to be supported by people outside the country like a missionary, and after that 1 year, anything can happen. Okay, we know some people that were on that for a couple of years and then that you can only be on it for maximum 5 years in any case. So what we decided to do was we just apply, we sent in our visa application. So I said, can you extend the visa application for 2 years? At least I thought, well, 2 years is better than worrying about this every year. So we put in our visa application, and the visa process took a very long time. So and they said, in the mission initially, they said like 2 or 3 weeks and we'll tell you when to come for your appointment. So 3 weeks went by, 4 weeks went by. And I mean, we're sitting there thinking that the worst is going to happen to us. You know, they're going to tell us that we need to leave the country. 5 weeks, a call from the foreign office, the office for, I think in Germany they call it office for aliens or office for people that work, foreigners, whatever. So they call us, and I go to office, and I'm thinking, well, now they're going to give me the bad news. You know, this man of faith thinking, well, you know, God's really on this. So I go to the office, and I sit down there, and so this lady says to me, good day, Mr. Noepa. We have some good news for you. So I thought, well, you know, now I'm ready for anything. So she says, we got your application, and we have decided to upgrade your visa status. And she says, with this visa status that we're now going to give you, it's going to mean that you're going to be able to work. And in 5 years' time, you'll get a permanent residence. And after 8 years, if you want to, you could become a citizen of this nation. She tells me that. And I said, well, I didn't even fill out an application form. You know, I didn't write anything. I didn't write you a letter. I didn't tell you that this would actually help me. I just put in an application form. And now you're telling me that I got this for nothing. And she said, yeah, that's actually right. And I mean, anybody who's lived in Germany will know that you don't get anything without an application form, right? You know, there's nothing, you know, there's paperwork for everything. And what about that? That took us from being in a situation where we had to worry about that all the time, took us from there, favor of God, to top level visa status, and now we're citizens of that nation from that one decision. Who was part of that decision? I don't know. How did they take that application and say, well, we want to give these people an opportunity? How did they say, we're going to take this application form and give this guy another visa level? It's favor of God. There was a favor of God because I could have tried to fight a whole lot of other things, but in this situation, God wanted us in that city at that time and for the future of that church. And it's obvious it was His plan. And therefore there was a hand of God, a favor of God that said, this is where I want you. And if you look back on your life and for the future, for your future, you need to be aware of the fact that every time there's a hand of the favor of God, that there is you need to see it as a pointer, an arrow that says, this is the way. Okay? Sometimes you need more than one arrow, but the favor of God is certainly a big signpost that says, this is the way. And when we look back, we see it, but most of the time when it actually happens, we don't see that this is the way forward. I mean, our building project in Dresden, one of those projects where we signed that project, we didn't have the money for it. A year later, when we paid for that property, and without taking any financing, the whole church knew that that was a moment of the favor of God that was on that project. We had a couple of negative voices up to that point that said, oh, the project, and do we want the building, and do we want the property, and all of that. After that moment, those voices disappeared. Okay? We don't ever hear anything negative about the building anymore because they know the favor of God has been on that project, and so the faith in their heart has actually grown. They've seen that it is the thing that He wants for us. So what about you? What about you? Look back at your life and look for those moments. And Nehemiah says that the favorable hand of God was upon me, and I told the people about that. He even had to wait 4 months. I mean, the interesting thing for me is as well that he knew what God was saying to him, and sometimes there was a waiting period. It was God, but he didn't have the moment of favor immediately. He waited 4 months, and then he had the right moment to speak to the king. Waiting is also part of it sometimes, but then there's the favor of God that says, hey, this is the way, walk in this way, you're on the right path. Why don't you say in your heart this evening, God, whatever your task is for me, send me. You want to, whatever the task is, you send me. You can bring me to the right place, and you can actually give me the favor that's needed for this task to happen. And for you, maybe it means that you need there's something that you've had on your heart. It means going down the road, we're going to start some sort of project right here in this city, and you've been saying, well, hey, I don't have the faith for this. Let me say to you, God's brought you into position. You can see the thing. Why don't you start putting out the feelers, so to speak, and then begin to wait for Him, that favor actually comes so that the project and the things that you've got in your heart, that He has an opportunity to confirm those things. Or otherwise, if it's not just yet, He's going to give you the timing. And when that favor comes, you're going to say, okay, hey, this is the timing of God. And then you don't miss the moment. You say, this is the moment. Let's go for it. There's a lot of people that miss it between the point of the vision coming, and you know what it is that you wanted, that God's saying to you, but then we become too impatient with the how we're going to do it. We get the what, but on the how, we think it's now, or we push the button too hard, or we think that we've got to have it now, or we've got His timing wrong. I mean, when we went back to South Africa back then, we never ever thought it would be 10 years. We thought, you know, 2 years, 3 years, and we're back in Germany. Really, that's how we saw it. But God knew that it had to be different. We had the how, we had the what, but we hadn't got the how sorted out yet. The how had to come through later. So we need to find that out. What is it that He wants for you? Favor is something that we receive. I've been using the word favor, and maybe I should just define it a little bit. For me, favor is something that we receive in a way in which we haven't earned it, or we haven't warranted that type of provision. Yeah, It's something that He's just done. He's just done. It's our the unmerited blessing that comes upon us that we haven't been able to influence ourselves, but we know that it's His hand that's been upon that. His hand has influenced that. Maybe it's a place, your place of work. Maybe it's an opportunity that you've had to live here. Maybe you've come to the city and you've married someone here. It can be a whole lot of different things, but God has actually brought you into that place and you've realized, wow, there's favor. God is actually opening a door for me. What He initiates, He will also orchestrate. We can be sure of that. He initiates it, then He orchestrates it, He puts it in our heart, then He shows us the how this is going to happen. And we need to wait for that to come about. How He does it is not His problem. And then I want to use scripture in Romans chapter 4. I think that's the next one. Romans chapter 4, verse 17. Here we go. We're going to have a look at, as I come to the end, Romans chapter 4, verse 17 says the following. It's become one of my favorite scriptures in the last couple of years. And it says this, speaking about Abraham, the father of our faith. Abraham is the father of all who believe. In verse 17 said, that is what the scriptures mean when God told him, I have made you the father of many nations. This happened because Abraham believed in the God who brings the dead back to life and who creates new things out of nothing. So what's up ahead for you as a church? What's up ahead for you as a people? What's up ahead in your own life? I believe there's things that He's going to call you to do that are going to bring back to life things. He wants to bring back to life things that have died in your heart. And there's some things that He wants to call into life which don't exist at that point. But that's what faith is. That's the kind of faith that Abraham had. What should you be believing for? Well, it's this kind of faith that says that thing which has died is possible. That thing which is non-existent, He can say a word and He can make this thing come into existence. Yeah? We have to believe in Christ when we come to the faith. We believe in Jesus Christ, the one who died and was resurrected. We believe that He was dead and then He rose to life. The same way that Abraham believed that the picture of his son that was in that that he had to offer up, he was in effect dead, and God gave His son back to him. In the same way that he believed, we also believe that which is dead, He can bring back to life. Jesus Christ was dead, raised to life. What is there in your life that you need to believe for? He is going to bring back to life that which doesn't exist, that He is going to bring into existence. That's what He does. That's what we need to believe for. But when we know that the fingerprint of God is upon us, that He's brought us into position, as we look back and we can see that, there's a favor of God, that is the faith that helps us, that builds our faith, that we can say, well, I can actually believe for this. I'm actually in a position to be able to say, well, Lord, You can actually do this. You're able to do this, which I never thought was possible before. And that's the kind of faith that through Nehemiah's words He actually released in their hearts and helped them so that they came and said, are we ready to work now? Nehemiah, help us. Now we want to get the work done. So a little exercise for us and a little bit of homework for us. If we can go to the next slide. I want to say to you this evening, encourage you this evening to recognize His grace in calling you. And that means His grace that you've actually become a Christian at all. There's an incredible hand, there's a fingerprint of God that brings us to a knowledge of Himself. There's a working of God. Most of us will look back and say, well, hey, I can think of 10 things that happened to me that caused me to actually, that happened in my life before I took that point, to that decision of becoming a Christian. That was something, a work of God that was apparent. Second thing would be recognize His grace that has brought you to this place at this time. Recognize that He has brought you to this place at this time. Folk, it's so important for you and for your work together in this team that you actually have that. Because that's what you call on. That's when the moment gets tough, you can actually look back and say, wow, look at all the things He's done to bring me to this point. The third thing is, recognize where He has actively prepared the way. Where has He actively prepared the way? Where has He actually opened doors? Where has there been provision for you? Where has there been a job? Where has there, and so on, all the things that I've been speaking about this evening. And then the fourth thing is, we need to write it down. I want to encourage you this evening to write down those fingerprints. Journalize that and never forget His acts in your life, the things that He has done in your life. And when you have those moments of saying, hey, what's happening? Where am I? Why am I discouraged? Am I in the right place? Go back to that. And if you're in a situation you're not too sure, like, am I in the right place right now? And I believe sometimes we can lose our way. And when people lose their way, and one of the things that I say to them is, where's the last point where you can really say, here was a moment when there was favor, the favor of God was upon, I experienced that fingerprint of favor. Where was that moment? And you need to go back to that moment and then say to yourself, where to from here? Where did I actually go wrong? Is there anything in that? And sometimes people even move nations. Sometimes people make major decisions and they end up in the wrong place. And then if they go back and say, well, where's the last time that I felt like I was in that? I know Malcolm speaks often about the term sweet spot of God. Where's that sweet spot? I need to get back to that. And then I can have faith again for what does He want to do with me going forward. So I want to encourage us this evening with this, because I think it's an important thing. I mean, I could give you a lot of other things about, you know, things about how to build a church and so on, but I really feel that in Nehemiah is just that what he actually said to get them to build the project. I don't think I have to come and tell you what to build or what to do. I think you've got leaders that know what to build in the city, but what you've got to see is you've got to see, looking back, let's celebrate the bringing of the way that God has brought you individually. Let's celebrate the way that He's brought you together as a church into position. And then let's celebrate that the favor. You celebrate the fact that, wow, isn't it incredible that you can actually meet in a venue like this? I mean, just think about those things one by one. Think about the fact that there's provision of God. Think about the fact that there's so many different ministries, things that are happening here. We need to see all those things and we need to celebrate them and say, hey, when we look back and we see all of that, that's what actually stirs our heart so that we can actually take the next step going forward.